welcome to iDeveloper Live episode 11. We've made it through to the 11th live episode and I still have absolutely no idea what I'm doing with this tech stuff and it's spending far too long trying to make it work. But hopefully with us today on the line as well is the wonderful high bar setting Mr. John Fox.
How are you, Scotty? I'm getting very confused trying to pay attention to the chat room and verbally joust with Mr. Rooney, who's soundly beating me at the moment. It's embarrassing.
Well, yeah, do you know what? We had a few complaints about last week's show that we gave more attention to the chat room than the people who might be listening later on, which is a difficult one because in a live show, you have to choose what to what to focus on, and the live audience are really important. But there we are. Never mind. Okay. But we will see if we can get the balance right. Now, I believe also with us here to do our Cocoa Fusion segment today, we should have Mr. Kevin Hochter.
I am here, Scotty. How are you doing?
I am doing really well, Kevin, and it's great to hear your tones. Now, I understand you said to me on Twitter earlier on you all flued up, but you sound quite healthy to me.
Well, I'm not dying, but I'm having the Texas sinus problems, so They do keep me from being as perky as I normally am.
So what's special about the sinus problems in Texas?
I don't know. I guess when you travel down here from New York, you tend to fight certain, I don't know if it's allergies or just the weather changes or whatever. I mean, we had a whole 3 days of winter, so, it's really screwing up my system. I can't stand it. Now it's back up in the 70s today, so I think I'll probably recover.
Oh, you have it really tough down there in Texas, don't you?
Yeah, we had a freeze. I mean, it almost killed us. We can't handle this below 32 stuff or below zero stuff for you guys over there.
Kevin, can you come up with a quick rewrite of the words to deepen the heart of Texas using, phrases like histamines or something like that?
I'm afraid I'm not up for that right now, John, but good thought. I you don't want to hear me sing. That's the last thing anybody wants to hear me do.
We don't want to hear you sing, even when you don't have sinus problems.
There you go.
And last but no means least, our special guest on today's show, Mr. Simon Maddox. How are you doing, Simon?
Hey, Scotty. How's it going?
It's going well. Now, people would probably not have... they wouldn't have heard you on this show before, because this is your first time on. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a mobile developer based in London. Work with lots of big clients. And my biggest claim to fame, as it were, is an app for the UK called 0870. It saves people lots and lots of money on their phone calls. I think it's saved something in the region of about £15 million so far. I had an obscene amount of downloads and an awesome amount of press.
And so that's great. 15 million quid is a lot of money. And if you can save us 15 million quid on this show, that would be fantastic. So we'll be talking to you about that a little bit later on in our... business section. So we're going to start with the news, and we sort of half mentioned this before the show came on, and sort of I couldn't decide if it was news or not, but I think it might be interesting to some people that they may be able to do this in the future. But when subscriptions were introduced with the Daily a few weeks ago, the iTunes terms and conditions changed that now that app providers could request the details of the people who were subscribing, and so that they could get certain information. I'm not sure exactly what information. That's going to maybe bring people like newspapers and advertisers into this market even more, now that they can get hold of the information. It's just not going to be anonymous downloads. Do people think that's going to change the landscape of the type of things that are going on at all?
Well, if we actually get to get customer information, I'd love it, because that's one of the barriers of the App Store, is you're kind of isolated from who's actually purchasing your software. You're isolated from having one-on-one conversations unless they just jump in there and start, filing tech support issues, and you get to know them that way.
That's interesting. Kevin, have you done anything with asking people to sign up? Because I know, for instance, the iMedia browser was released, and Dan Wood was happy that they had left in the ability for when the app starts up saying, hey, would you like to join our newsletter? Which I thought was positive. So I'm wondering if you have done anything. I haven't looked at No Thirst from the Mac App Store.
It's on my list. You know, I didn't want to do it initially because I was really afraid of getting rejected for any reason. So I was playing the paranoid developer and isolating and eliminating anything I could find that could be questionable in the app. But I really want to put that in there because I think it is important that they do get our newsletter. They do have some sort of way of finding out what we're doing. You know, it's a barrier right now. I think it's a big barrier.
And to be precise, this changes to the iOS App Store. Not they haven't done anything for the Mac App Store, correct?
I thought it was both.
Was it for both?
I don't know.
Well, isn't it a single set of terms and conditions?
I don't know. I haven't looked at that. But I mean, I was going to mention how funny it is because I think in the last 2 weeks or so, I at least maybe it's my perception, like 3 or 4 different changes. Where you're downloading something on your iPhone, whatever, and says, "Hey, the terms and conditions have changed. Would you like to have a look at them?" And I, in general, I think nobody reads these things, but I think even less so in this case.
Yeah, I do a TLDR on all those. I really should get in there and read all the details. I'm usually waiting for somebody like Craig Hockenberry or somebody to shout about it, and then I go in and look.
I would be surprised if they were exactly the same because the conditions the sale conditions are certainly different between the two. There's no in-app purchase on Mac app, so how could they use the same terms and conditions?
Good point.
That's very true. I'm just talking out of my backside as normal, I guess.
Quick, put up a picture of your backside and just
wow.
it's interesting that we're heading down this route again, and I guess it's just showing that Apple are developing down this line. But really, is everyone going to be channeled into business? Now, we don't know what the terms and conditions are of News Corp because they were the first to do this with Apple. I'm sure they've had a special deal, but I wonder if they're paying for that information from Apple.
I mean, buying people's addresses? Oh no.
I know, it'd be unheard of, wouldn't it?
Well, I think they have to. There's a newsletter that I subscribe to, which I quite like, called Monday Note, and it's two French guys, Frédéric Filou or something, and Jean-Louis Gasset. So Gasset, as people probably know, he was at Apple, and then he famously made B in hope that he was going to sell BOS to Apple. And Frédéric, I'd never heard from before, but they talk about the state of newspapers and whatnot. And they have devoted quite a bit of a recent issue to this whole discussion about subscriptions and the changes Apple have made. And is it possible for the economics of magazines and newspapers to exist within the terms that Apple has set for them, the 30% cut, which is already considerable for the newspaper world, but more importantly, the inability to get subscriber information. So this is very interesting stuff to look out. And it seems to me that Apple is thinking more along the lines of little bits of content subscription and less so about application development. But here we have an overlap in interests. As Kevin and others have pointed out repeatedly, we want to know our customers.
Right, well, that sounds like we've run dry on that one. So people have been demanding more tech. So without further ado, let's have some Cocoa Fusion. So, Mr. Kevin Hochter, what is Cocoa Fusion on today?
Well, I've got. I'm actually going to go over the some tips for core data modeling. But before I started that, there was a holy war going on, a holy coding war going on about single returns or early returns in methods or functions if you're not in objective programming. But so I thought I'd clear that up real quick because I am the authority on it, so I'll just throw that out there. No one can argue with me because we're not on Twitter right now. See, I'm from the old school where when we were writing methods and functions back in the day, it was always supposed to be linear. It was the proper method was to avoid go tos and early returns and. But I tend to use early returns, but I have very simple rules for it. So here's my list. Keep your methods short and focused to avoid needing the the extreme if nesting that happens when you start getting messy with your methods. Early return only if there's no need for cleanup code before exiting a method. And if you have any duplication of code when you're doing an early return, then you're asking for trouble because you're writing the same code more than once and basically you're doing it wrong. So that's it for me. I mean, it was a pretty simple debate. I didn't join in because I was like 12 hours late for it. But I thought I'd settle it for everybody so there was no more need for the holy wars out there. And you know, next time I'm on, I'll tackle curly brackets and indenting so we don't have any issues on those anymore, because I know it's pretty easy to keep those defined.
I mean, I guess the main argument against early return is that often your code will suddenly become littered with conditionals that if you could just early return, it wouldn't need to.
Yeah, I think the nice part about early returns is you just don't have all this. You can get messy and nested with if statements if you're trying to handle everything, and an early return kind of stops some of that. The problem is some people actually put in code to clean up what they've set up in a method and then return. And I think anytime you start doing that, you're just waiting to shoot yourself in the foot that at some point in the future, you're going to change your cleanup code and you won't do it in every spot. And then you're going to end up burned and you don't know why. So that's why I like early returns if there's nothing else but the return after a test. That's my simple rule for it. So, well, let me get into the core data modeling tips. Because we can get the religious wars started again on Twitter later. First of all, to be clear, Core Data is not a database, and some people get confused about that. It's a framework to manage object graphs and persistence of data, but the database is really part of the back end of most Core Data models. It's not Core Data itself. So, when you're using Core Data, you might be using a SQLite database as a store. So good database design is still important when you're setting up your data model. The model revolves around creating a set of entities, and each entity has a set of attributes and potentially relationships. You should make sure that each entity maps to a class in your app. By default, you've got an NSManage object that Core Data gives you as the class for every entity, but you don't normally want to leave it that generic because you're going to want to set up some well-defined behavior and you're going to want to refer to your classes or refer to your entities as a specific class and not just make everything generic and do any kind of generic setting and getting of the values in the Core Data model. The goal with your data model, of course, is to create a clean view of your data, and it's supposed to be optimized to provide you the best way to retrieve that data. So the way you're looking at your model is the best way you are going to need to access that data and get it back for display purposes, for views, for reports, for whatever purpose you've created the data, creating the model. It's important that your model represents that, and that's the primary reason you're doing this. As far as thinking about database design or any kind of model design of data, you want to normalize your database, which means you want to reduce the duplication of data. You want to try to avoid having the same value repeated over and over again. You would prefer to have an entity reference another entity than store a string value that might better be stored in a relationship that you once can change that string value, and every entity that refers to that gets that new string label, as opposed to having it buried in every single object and then having to iterate through and change a string based on some need in the in that entity. The Core Data has some really great ways and great methods for setting up a nice normalized database, and one of those designs is an abstract setting on an entity. Abstract means that you're not actually using that entity for storing data, but it is a parent for other entities. And what you can do is create an abstract entity and then create a lot of child entities from that and keep all the common attributes and the common relationships in that abstract, which gives you the one-stop shop for basically subclassing in your actual code. So I can decide, I can design a single class to handle all my common methods and attributes, and then I create subclasses of that class, and those map really nicely to the abstract class and the child entities that are built off of that abstract entity. CoreData also does a fantastic job of managing many-to-many relationships, which can be tricky to do when you're doing actual database work. You have to have a table in between managing what's going from what to what, and CoreData basically just lets you assign a relationship to another entity and say that it's many-to-many, and then it takes care of creating the database and the structure behind it, and you don't have to worry about it. But you can use this to a great advantage. One example would be in an application that has a series of objects, and those objects might have tags assigned to them. So your tag entity is going to be looking that each of your objects in a list could have a tag, and each of those tags could be assigned to multiple objects in your list. So you have a main-to-main relationship there, and with CoreData, it's really simple to set up that relationship, and you're done. A few tips when you're designing your model: avoid setting the attribute restrictions in the model. I've found these to be, although they're really nice looking, that you can say, I want to set up my my attribute for, let's see, my name on an object. I want the name to be required, so I don't check that optional box. And or I want an amount to be always positive, so I'll set a minimum value of 0. And even though CoreData will handle those and throw errors for you, what you end up doing is you get these errors at the time that the data is saved. And I found that to be a very bad time to sometimes deal with this, because you're not always able to handle an error situation well when your data is being saved. So I found it better to avoid to make every attribute optional in my database, and then go ahead and check for required values when the user is setting up the data, when they're doing the data entry, or when you're going through and verifying values for your data. That way you don't have to worry about getting trapped when the save happens and you're not ready to handle it, but the database throws up an error and you're kind of stuck. Another, the same goes for the min and max. I've had some really nasty errors come up because I've checked for the min and max on data entry, but something else has set them to be outside of that range. And so I've imported data, it comes up negative. I didn't do a test there, but CoreData found that as an error, throws that up. And I didn't have routines in that save spot to manage that. It's just a little more buried, and I like my stuff to be on the surface better. Lastly, the relationships that you set up in CoreData. You can set up a relationship without an inverse relationship, but it'll throw a warning, and it's important that you acknowledge that warning. You know, that it's a bad idea in CoreData to have a relationship without an inverse, because you lose this validation checking. You lose this ability to kind of go back and forth and know that you don't lose data. Plus, these relationships have settings on them that can be very helpful. So if you have an object that has a bunch of children, and you set up that object to cascade as a delete rule for those children, you don't have to deal with that when you're deleting your objects. You don't have to worry about those being orphaned out there and sitting in the in your database without, or sitting in your data without actually having a parent connected to them. And you can also set up a relationship rule to just clean up the to set it to zero or to nullify the value for a relationship. And having an inverse, normally what you're doing, you're cascading on the one side and then nullifying on the other side, and you have a nice little clean routine where you don't have any data that's pointing to the wrong thing, and you don't have any children that are out there hanging without a parent. So I think that's pretty much my tip set. So I'll go ahead and leave it at that, and that's my core data overview.
Are we allowed to ask questions?
Of course. I can't guarantee I'll answer them, but you ask anything you want.
So, no, I have a real question. So, you, back to data modeling, because you're saying that when you set up your entities, you said you wanted to think about the, you know, designing them with efficiency in mind. Have you ever built applications where you use anything, where you use the XML data store?
I haven't, because it's slow.
Yeah,
it's very pokey. It's great if you. I used it early on when I was doing some testing, and I wanted to see what was actually in the data, and it was easier just to go in there. But now we have a lot of utilities that let you look at the SQLite database and the core data structure, and I really don't see any use for the XML format anymore, and the old binary format. You know, that was really dangerous to kind of have. It was a closed box.
And have there ever been times where you really wished you could drop down to the SQL level, either for efficiency's sake or whatever?
There have been some times, because it's awful nice just to do a one-line SQL statement and just kind of delete a bunch of values or change a bunch of values. But I found that most of the time when I've had those desires to do that, it's because I was doing it wrong in core data, and there was a better method for doing it. Plus, now with the 10.6 version of core data, it has a lot more efficiency to it. So, whereas I used to have trouble just getting a count of objects because core data wanted to go out there and get all the objects, now I can just ask core data for a count, and it is very efficient, and it just does what it needs to do just to get the count or the sum, or, you know, it's much more well behaved as of Snow Leopard.
Okay, are there ways of doing to get a count following, you know, a count following a predicate, like saying I want to find how many objects would be returned if I fetched with this predicate?
Yes, and that's, like I said, that's new with the 10.6 stuff. You could always do that. You could always ask for a count. But unfortunately, it would do a fetch, and you get everything. So 10.6, though, it actually knows enough to just go get the count and not bring all those objects into memory. And you have a lot more control in core data. And it doesn't matter how you set up your model. You still have those controls.
I think something that a lot of people maybe get a little bit confused about is we're told when designing core data models that it's, you know, to think of it as an object store, an object stack, not as a database. And yet constantly when we're talking about models, we're using database terms, many to many's in all the rest of it. So, I mean, how, when you're looking at a designing a core data model, you know, do you really think differently from the old database days? I mean, you're an old boy who's been in many database design sessions, I'm sure. Or do you really have to break away from that? Otherwise, you're going to make some serious mistakes.
You know, I don't think it's necessary to pull yourself away from the database design thought process. I still think of my data models as schemas, and my team yells at me when I use the term schema, but I still think of them that way, and I still think of normalization. I still think of how I'm connecting things, and how much repetition I have in there, and what happens if I change this value? Does it cascade nicely in a database? You know, the only thing I don't think about now is what my actual tables are. I'm looking at this as, you know, if I set this up, how am I going to be able to access this data best? This is a class now to me. So, and I've actually used true object-oriented database in the past, and I kind of miss some of the the abstraction of the a complete abstraction of the database, where you know you don't even have to worry about sequencing of child objects to a parent. You know, the object model actually takes care of sequencing, and you can actually move them around sequencing. That's something that Core Data doesn't do because because the database might not support it well, or it just doesn't. They haven't decided to code that in there. And I think but for me, I still look at it as database design. I try to keep from thinking about what commands or what tables I'm actually building. I try to think of it still as here's my classes for my app.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not getting too hung up on it. I guess the main data is an old. I keep using the word old. Sorry,
that's
Kevin.
That's fine. I'm used to it. I love it. As
an experienced database developer, I mean, you understood the consequences of issuing accounts and it doing a fetch,
right?
Because of your database experience, where I guess if you're coming straight to this model, it says all counts. There's no people may be getting caught. So, having an understanding of how a database works behind the scenes and then maybe what this is doing helps you to design better.
Yeah, and it also helps. I sat down with the Core Data team at WWC a few years ago and, specifically asked them questions on performance and what does this do and what does that do? And I thought I was being efficient by asking for an at sum and an at average in a table for an entity on table. And I was told by them, oh, guess what? It just iterated through all your objects twice to do that. And I didn't realize that. It's like, okay, so using these two terms, it iterated twice. And they said, yeah, it's more efficient if you do it by hand. And they weren't really at the Snow Leopard stage at that point where they had the more efficient methods. And so I found out, I said, my app is slow because I'm thinking that this call was actually doing a nice, efficient SQL call, and it wasn't. It was actually iterating through objects and pulling them all in a fetch. And wow, what an eye-opener, because I was thinking like a database person. I was thinking database efficiency, and Core Data is really not a database, so you have to watch that kind of stuff.
Well, is there a way of logging the SQL statements that do get generated on your behalf?
You can use my mind goes blank. What's our performance tool in Xcode that I don't use enough? But you can use that to track all your data access and all your calls and.
You're talking about instruments.
Yes, instruments. Thank you. Wow. Sorry, okay, I'm old.
That's good. You've just blown all your credibility out of the water.
I'm old. It's okay. It just these things fall out of my head every so often. Yes, instruments. And you can track everything in there, and it does a really great job of detailing all your access.
But does it really drop down? I mean, because that was the thing. So I'm listening to this conversation. It's like, well, you do a select count, and that is very efficient. And so right now, I'm curious to know if the optimization in 10.6 is that they end up doing that.
I haven't actually done any kind of instruments on the new model. I mean, unfortunately, I just started being able to use the 10.6 stuff. It's all brand new to me. So I've been stuck in the world of Leopard and prior for this. So, but I haven't done it yet. So I can't even answer that for you. I just know what the Core Data team has told me and what I've learned at the Apple conference.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for that, Kevin. That's great. And it's a bit of a conversation. Well, I say a conversation, that's maybe a little bit generous. A couple of comments gone on in the chat room about tools that go around Core Data, and I actually think that will make quite a good segment at some point in the future. If you've one of these people who has spent many an hour playing with lots of different tools and looking at things like Core Data Editor and Mo Generator and hundreds of others that may be out there, then maybe we'll do a show on that soon. And I think you've played with some of those, haven't you, Kevin? So maybe we'll mix it in with one of your Cocoa Fusion sessions or something.
Sounds good, yeah.
Okay, so that's maybe what we will look to do. Let me see if I can get the right person on the screen. There we are. It's me. Isn't that gorgeous and beautiful? Right. Okay, before anyone has time to comment, He's been sat very patiently here on the line with us. Well, I hope he's still here. And he's I'm been very here, quiet, yeah. Our special. That's good. So he was polite and he wasn't busting. Our guest, Simon Maddox, is here to do our Mac software business section. So we'll give him the music time to get himself ready, and then we'll deal with some Mac software business. Well, Simon, welcome to the show.
Hello.
You're still there. I was getting worried for a minute. That's good. I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit more about your app again in a minute, because it saved people millions of pounds here in the UK. But the main reason that we're doing this segment is actually also recently your app that was incredibly popular. Change from being a free app to a paid app, and we just want to talk about your experience with that and how it's gone, where you now keep your yacht and all that sort of stuff. but first of all, I know we did this at the top of the show, but that was sort of 35 minutes ago or so ago now. Tell us a little bit about your app, what it does. It's a UK only app, so maybe use a few terms that some of our American and other parts of the world people will help to follow. And then we'll talk about this whole reason why you suddenly decided you want to make some money.
Of course. Cool. Okay, so the app 0870 basically turns expensive phone numbers into cheaper ones. So in the UK, we have the concept of an 08 number, 0870, 0845, 0800, things like that. And from a mobile phone, they cost something in the region of about 35p a minute. Now, there are replacement numbers for a lot of these 08 numbers that will come out of your contract rather than costing you 35p a minute on top of your contract. So all the app does is kind of, you dial the number that you want, the 08 number. It will go off to my server, which is just, there's an API running there, so anybody can access the data, build whatever they want on it. And then it will just return you kind of a yes or no, there is a cheaper number, at which point you can say, let me call it, and hopefully it will save you some money.
Well, I like the sound of anything that saves money.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I couldn't tell from the screen grab. You have your own dialing pad. It's not like you're able to intercept in the actual phone application, are you?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean it's a standalone app. The Android version is a lot nicer than that because you can intercept the kind of the dialer. So the iPhone version is it's a standalone app. You have to remember to go to it every single time, which is a bit of a pain. But it works. You dial, kind of modeled it off the iOS dialer, and you just dial, press, hit call. It will go off and do its thing.
I guess if you're in the in the UK, it's most people are reasonably aware that as soon as you dial 08, it's going to cost you money. I mean, even 0800, which is supposed to be free phone on anything else, costs you money on a mobile phone. And so I guess the having to launch a different app, it would be great if you could tack into the other stuff, but it's not going to be at the end of the world. And if you're saving money, it's worth doing, isn't it? So
absolutely, absolutely. Especially like for the last, what would it have been, a year and a half or so, it was free. So there was absolutely no reason not to try it.
Okay, so it was free. Was it ad based initially when you were when it was free?
It was, yeah. So originally, when it launched, I stuck AdMob in there. The ads were pretty bad, to be honest. But it was making a reasonable amount. Let me just check for a second. I mean, in the first 2 weeks, it made $680 in AdMob revenue. So it's nothing to shout home about, but it was nice. It's a nice little side earner, which was pretty good. Then last summer, I think it was, iAds launched and I stuck iAds in. To mention about AdMob again, what it also did, one of the most annoying ads in there was to, when you pressed on the ad, it would dial an 09 number, which can cost you, £1, £2, £3 a minute. Which kind of defeated the whole purpose of it. And there was no way to kind of block those ads without blocking an entire amount of other ads, which was so frustrating.
Right, so well, using an application that was going to save you money on phone calls, it could actually cost you more on phone calls. Yeah, I guess you were really pleased with that.
It was the most, you know, every probably week or so, I'd get an email from a user saying, you know, that they pressed this ad by mistake. You know, it's cost them however much it cost them. You know, you have to obviously reply back, you know, sorry, you know, I'm trying to work a way around this. You know, spoke to AdMob about it. Nope, can't do that. No way to kind of get around this without blocking an entire category. And it turns out, you know, that category was kind of the only category that they were showing ads for this app.
Are 09 numbers, are they typically used for like dating services or things like that?
Exactly, okay. Yeah. It's you know, the dating services, the porn chat lines, all that sort of stuff. You know, all the stuff that, you know, you really wouldn't be kind of calling, I guess. Maybe you would.
So I read on your blog that where you had that nice graph about how you estimated the amount of money saved, and you based it on a 5-minute average call. Had you ever thought in your app of doing something that actually, you know, tracks it and displays it? And so what I'm getting at is that, you know, why I think this app is really cool. It's like, what an incredible waste of money. Yet on the other hand, this is like ringtones, you know, there are companies who enjoy making money off of this because they can. And it's such a stupid thing to spend money on. And I was just thinking it would be nice for the app to be able to say, yeah, and spending whatever, £2 on the stupid call, here's something else you could have done with it. Like give money to Developers Against Poverty, for example.
Of course. Yep. There are very good reasons for 08070 numbers. So it's kind of a virtual number, so you can route it however you need based on call volume, all sorts of interests and things like that. So I can see why, you know, it's mostly call centers and things that use it. So when you phone your bank or your broadband provider, all that sort of, you know, them kind of companies, that they'll all use these 08 numbers just because they can route it to, you know, this call center, that call center, etc. And the other thing kind of that I really wanted to be able to do was exactly as you say, you know, you've now saved £2 on the phone call, but it was completely unreliable because, you know, you'd launch the phone app, make the call, but then there was no guarantee that you would ever be, you know, the user would ever return back to your app. You know, sometimes, you know, the majority of the time actually, it would just return the user back to the phone app, which means that, you know, I'm sitting there saying, you know, this is how long the call's been going on for. If you don't open the app for another 2 weeks, all of a sudden, those stats are ridiculous.
You saved $12 billion. And by the way, you shouldn't be spending so much time on a sex line. We've now sent a message to your wife, or at least we think she's still your wife.
You getting that from history, John?
Yes.
So you switched to iAds. You said that. I mean, that's an interesting conversation itself. I mean, iAds, different revenue model, Apple sort of controlling it. Did, you know, firstly, was it an easy switch to make based on what you were doing before? And how did your revenue change?
It was, you know, it was totally, totally easy. I actually submitted one version where if the ad failed, I think it was showing a test ad or something. I can't remember exactly. And Apple kind of said, you know, next time you submit, you need to kind of fix this. They didn't worry too much about it, which was quite good. So that was the kind of the most painful part of it, was that I'd accidentally submitted something that wasn't quite right. And they said, you know, fix it next time, which I did. As far as kind of quality of ads go, obviously there were much, much better, you know, higher quality ads. You know, you weren't getting ads that were launching, you know, the phone app and calling numbers which were, you know, costing people £1 a minute. You know, on AdMob, you're getting all sorts of kind of ringtones, wallpapers, all sorts of things that, you know, I don't want to be associated with. Whereas on iAds, you know, at the time it was US only, which was a bit, you know, I was kind of waiting until it launched in the UK. But as soon as it launched in the UK, you were getting things like Skype, Yell, I think, and, you know, some quite high quality advertisers, and, you know, the money stayed the same throughout, quite surprisingly. So, you know, I was making about the same amount of money, but the quality of advertisers went way up.
Okay, so that was a win all round then.
It was, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you were there and you were making a little bit of money, say not huge amounts, but can I ask, how long did the app take to develop? You'd have to reveal that if you don't wish to.
I'm absolutely happy. I mean, it was the first app I built for the iPhone. I built it in a night or two, just to literally learn how to build iPhone apps. This was well before the App Store launched, during the beta period. Submitted it to Apple. A couple of weeks, I think it was just on the day of the deadline for kind of get your apps in here for release, at which point Apple spent 429 days reviewing the thing. It was
429 days.
I know. It was incredibly frustrating. There was conversations between O2 and the UK, so they were the only provider of the iPhone at the time. There was mentions of BT being involved, the telecoms provider in the main one in the UK, kind of Apple asking their advice. And quite strangely, it was quite funny. All these conversations started happening around the same time as O2, the official, the exclusive carrier at the time, had launched their first Android phone. I think it was the original Samsung Galaxy or something like that. And I kind of said to Apple, the app's been available for Android for, what would it have been, 8-9 months now? But you won't let it out on the, and you're not letting it out on the iPhone because O2 are kicking up a fuss, apparently. At which point, Apple went, I think we are kind of being shafted, I guess. And within 15 minutes of me sending that email, the app got approved.
Oh, a man who can shift major mobile corporations and computer people. You're going to get a job anywhere. Although it did take you 400 and however many days to get around to that, so maybe not. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be getting on for a record 400 odd days in review.
Apparently, the only one I've heard that's taken longer is Google Voice or Latitude or one of the two.
Because that was a comms thing.
I'm sorry. So during that review period, how many back and forth emails did you have with them? I mean, is this something like you wrote yourself a little application that every morning it would, flash something on your screen saying write another bitter letter to Apple?
It wasn't quite like that. So initially, for the first month, I kind of let it sit there and review, thinking, there's got lots of work to get on with. And after about a month, I emailed them. Said, any news, at which point you get the automated thing saying, we'll get to it. And that was all I heard. So I email again a few weeks later. That's it. That's all I was getting. And then, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, Phil Schiller from Apple started replying to bloggers, blog posts and things like that. He was phoning them up. So just off the back of that, I thought, sod it, I'm gonna email him, at which point, I think it was maybe 2 weeks later, I got an email from somebody else at Apple saying, we'd like to get, we'd like to talk to you about the app. Can you give us some more information? And it went from there. And the conversation I had with this chap was extremely good. He was, very helpful, but unfortunately he's asked to be, kept anonymous.
And how far into it was this?
That would have been, just over a year later.
Okay, so that was a whole year before you actually got someone that was interactive with you.
Exactly. Okay. It was, I was hearing nothing until then. I just, I didn't know what was going on. So it was quite frustrating, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I give you a lot of credit for sticking with it that long. I probably would have given up a lot earlier.
I was tempted.
But
so you'd spent... go on, John.
So, I mean, when you were doing this... You wanted to get into iPhone development, and so you said, okay, well, I'll do this to kind of get my technical chops for it. What can you say this did for kind of your reputation? Because I read on this little interview about how you've been referred to as a one-man A-team. did you when you were doing this, did you purposefully pick this thinking, oh, here's a touchy subject. If I succeed in bringing down the major mobile telecoms, that should surely help my reputation and I'll get lots of work. Was that what you were thinking, or are you just something you were scratching your own itch?
Exactly, yeah. I wanted this app. I had an iPhone. That was my main phone. I wrote it for myself thinking, this will be an interesting way to kind of just start doing it. I'd never done any kind of Apple development before that. I'm deep into it now, but never done anything before that. Just thought, you know, scratch my own itch. Let's build something that I will use, you know, on a weekly basis. So that's what I did.
And so this API service that you have, can you tell us quickly, you know, what you wrote it in, where you host it?
Okay. So the website is 0870.me. That's 0870.me. It's hosted on Heroku. So, you know, it's using their free tier. It handles all the traffic that it needs to. So obviously, you know, hosting on Heroku is Ruby. So it's literally just a database. It says, you know, this number equals this number, this number equals this number, or this number, or this number. You know, it's not particularly complex on the back end. And you know, if you ask for it, I do send you the database dump. You know, people have actually integrated that database into things like PBXs, so that when their corporations, people in their companies will phone whoever it may be from the kind of the company landline, it will go through the PBX into the database, and at that point it will try and replace the number. So there's all sorts of interesting uses for this data.
So
which is quite cool.
It's a plain web service using JSON or something, I'd assume?
Exactly. There's XML, JSON, and plain text.
Can you just give us that web address again?
Yep. I'll stick it in the chat if you want, but it's 0870.me.
And you really, from the free level of Heroku, it handled the volume?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, I get an email once a month saying, you know, your app's serving 30 errors a month because it's slow, but that's acceptable to me. You know, it's getting hundreds of thousands of requests per month. So, you know, 30 out of hundreds of thousands isn't a big deal.
Especially since it's free. Yay, Heroku. That's more money to make donations to developers against poverty. Because if you were to have to host something yourself, I mean, like the minimum cost for like a slice host or something is like $30 plus the time to set it up.
Well.
So, Scotty, I would say that we should be able to put him down for at least a $300 donation, wouldn't you say?
He's got to become the largest donor, hasn't he? So he's only got to beat $35,000. Anyway, but we ought to talk to how that could happen, first of all, because the app was free and you were living off, well, not necessarily living off, but the app was making you basically what by many iPhone standards is a decent ad revenue, but it's still not what you'd say a developer wage.
Over the course of a year, I paid for a holiday to New York.
Yeah, which is nice to have.
Exactly, yeah. You know,
nice
I'm
place
not
to go. Great place to spend a little bit of time. Love New York. But you, on the 1st of January this year, I think I remember rightly, you switched from free to paid. So can you tell us a little bit about why, how much you charge for it, how that's gone, are you now a millionaire, and any numbers that you care to, if you can tell us sort of, you know, downloads before, downloads after, or okay. as a percentage towards each other, if you'd rather not do all direct numbers, that would be great.
Okay. So, yeah, 1st of January, you know, New Year's Day, I'm sat there replying to emails. Got a load of client work on at the time as well. And I'm sat there, you know, replying to emails that actually, you know, I'm not earning anything off, if you will. You know, I'm not doing any paid work. I'm replying to these emails that, you know, aren't going to actually benefit me. So I thought, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I'm not going to get any more downloads. So I made it 59p, 99 cents. And, you know, thought, you know, so at the time, the downloads, I think, were between 500 and 700 a day or something like that. So I thought, you know, it's not going to, you know, if I get 50 downloads a day, now it's paid, you know, I'm happy. And let me just pull up AppViz. The average downloads per day at the moment is 213. So, you know, it's halved, essentially. And then on, if I pull this up, and then for the last few days, though, there was an article on MSN UK. Apparently, it's been on the homepage for a while. And because of that article, since Thursday, it's been downloaded the same amount of times as, so about, you know, between 500 and 700 times per day, so the same as when it was free. So it's pretty cool.
Right. That is a drop, but it's not as much as I thought it would have been.
Exactly the same. I mean, I spoke to a lot of people about it beforehand and said, you know, what kind of numbers do you expect? You know, they expected at most I'd get 10%, so you know, 50 downloads at most. But it's been silly.
So you scrap the free version altogether, yeah?
Yep. The most.
And do you still have ads in the paid version?
This is the thing. At the moment, I do, because I haven't finished the next version. So the next version is going to have all sorts of cool features. There's actually some interesting stuff that I didn't realize was in iOS 4, like the telecoms stuff. So I'm working on features with that at the moment. So as soon as that comes out...
Which, of course, you're then going to come back on to iDeveloper Live and do a technical segment on for us.
Of course. Of course.
You didn't really get a choice there, did you? Carry on.
Yeah. At which point, you know, there's going to be some cool new features and the ads removed. I get, you know, the odd email. I think there are a couple of reviews on the App Store saying, you know, this has got ads in as well. How dare you? You know, you might as well be killing our children or whatever.
some nice moderated sort of normal sort of level thinking ads responses. I mean,
I've stopped reading the reviews for it now. You know, you get some crazy people, as I'm sure you do for, you know, every other app, but it's insane. Some of the people think I'm, you know, BT.
Well, you're in the. You're
do you find
in,
it hard? Just on a totally different note, do you find it hard to deal with though? Do you find it when someone says me, you know, tweets something or says, you know, about how crap this show is or something is, you know, I just, you know, I just want to
cry,
go out and, you know, no, I'm more thinking like go burn their house down or that sort of thing.
I mean, it used to kind of bother me at first. You know, I used to go through reading every single review, you know, refreshing it every half an hour kind of thing. I don't anymore. You know, if I read the reviews once a month, then, you know, that's you know, quite strange for me. It's quite nice though, because, you know, I still get support emails saying, you know, this doesn't work. I'm going to call the cops on you and send you to jail. I've had that before, no lie, which is awesome. And then, you know, every couple of weeks now, it was quite a lot last year, actually. Every couple of weeks, you'll get an email from somebody just saying, you know, thanks, you know, the app has saved me 30, 40, 50 quid, maybe even less than that. You know, I'm unemployed and that, you know, that money means a lot to me. So thank you, which makes everything worthwhile. You know, it's really cool.
That's really good. So
that's really kind of the reason why I didn't make it paid for so long as well, just because that was, you know, it's a barrier to entry then as well. Then I just thought, sod it in the end.
Well, I mean, the point is, it's now allowing you to probably spend a little bit more time on it than you would have been able to before, and it's just going to get better.
Exactly. That's what I'm hoping.
Wait, so if you had it to do over again, would you start it out with a paid app?
No, I don't think so. I think most of its success is down to the fact that it has been free for a year and a half. You know, it's been featured in the majority of gadget magazines in the UK. It's been in all but one of the national newspapers here. It's been in, you know, the biggest Sunday newspaper, you know, fairly regularly. And would it have been like that if it was paid? You know, I don't know. I mean, it was in MSN, on MSN, which had a massive spike. But, you know, I don't know. So I probably would have done it the same, just because, you know, people are talking about the app. It's all word of mouth, and it's quite strange. You know, I kind of, as you do when you're in public, you look at what apps people have on their phones, and it's quite regular that I probably once every couple of days that I'll see my app on the home screen.
Has that ever gotten you a date?
No, I'm engaged, so no.
I have one last question. So then you said, had you ever kind of felt that somebody from the mobile telecoms were kind of like listening in on your conversations or looking for ways to discredit you or otherwise make your life annoying? Because this must have had a negative impact on their money-making thing. No?
Oh, I mean, it absolutely has. I mean, the day it got approved, I was joking with a few friends that, the mobile networks are going to start sending the thugs around and smashing up my laptop and all this sort of stuff, which was quite funny at the time. That never happened, obviously. nothing. I'm getting well with the guys at O2. I've got a few friends that work there, and they're, you know, more than supportive of the app. You know, a couple of them actually use it themselves, which is good. There's been no negative feedback from from any of the networks after, you know, after it was launched, which has been quite good.
Have you ever asked your internal people what the actual cost? I mean, if the whole point of this thing is to be able to provide this flexible routing service, does that cost anything more than a micro P per call, or is there actual some real cost to that?
I genuinely don't know. I mean, it's going to cost different depending on, you know, the organization, but it's up to the kind of the organization, the company that you're calling, to actually set the system up. You know, that they get an 08 number that's pointed at wherever they want, and then they handle the rest of the infrastructure. And then there's like a revenue share between usually BT, I guess, and the mobile network, or, you know, BT or the mobile network, I think, and the company involved. You know, they share a percentage of the profit on that. I don't know what the numbers are. I've tried to find out. Don't know. I don't think I have the right contact at the networks.
Scotty, could you find that out for us, please?
Of course, John. You know, all information is at my fingertips. The world is there. Well, Simon, I think that's a fantastic story. I think there's a lot people can learn from there. People shouldn't be afraid to pay for their charge for their work. Equally, you're touting the benefits that you had of being free in the first place. You stuck with it through 400 odd days of not getting through the App Store, and it's really, really good that you end up with a success story. And I really hope it just continues to get better. And I'm going to be totally honest, I haven't got the app, but in about 10 minutes' time, I will, because it constantly annoys me seeing those numbers come through on my mobile phone.
Well, Bill, I'm more than happy you know, if people email you or something, more than happy to send you a load of promo codes for listeners.
Well, there we are. If you are in the chat room and you want a promo code for that, drop me an email and we'll sort that out in the next week or two. That's one of the bonuses you will get for listening live. There we are. That's a way to keep lively people on, isn't it? Is make some deals that only the people who are on live can have, and then they've got to come and listen to me roar, and before we don't do any editing.
But the agreement is that for every promo code you get, you do a 5x contribution to Developers Against Poverty.
Well, there we are, John. You've brought me right on to Developers Against Poverty. We're just going to put that in. We had a great opening week, and we hit 40, I think it was about $42,000. I have to say this week has been a little bit slow, but I think that's probably because the developers are all preparing themselves, preparing great campaigns. We're up to $43,815, I think, as we speak. I just make sure there's been no more donations since the start of the show. $44,315 we're at now, which is still absolutely fantastic. 2,215 people at the end of this campaign will get clean water for the next 20 years, and even if it stopped today, you know, that is absolutely fantastic. I am sure lots of developers are preparing to do a day of sales or something else in over the next few weeks. It's all going to pick up again, and we're going to smash the $50,000 target. But it has been, you know, I've been a little bit sad this week watching it just creep up by a couple of $1,000s when I want it to go flying up. But there we are. That's just my personal, you know, whatever it is, ego about it. But please, this is a great cause. I don't get any of the money. Honest, I really don't. It just all goes, 100% goes to putting clean water into villages and schools and communities where it's just impossible to get it. And it's not, that's not just a matter of making it, you know, life and death just for health reasons. But, you know, if you're spending 3 or 4 hours a day having to get water, you can't work. And so, you know, just having a well, a pump in a village can just change even more about people's lives. That $44,315 has come through just 71 people donating. Now, I know thousands of people listen to this show. and 71 people so far have donated. Now, I know you're all getting ready and I'm not hassling you, and I know you're all going to do it and it's all going to happen, but I just have to keep reminding you, the campaign will close on the 31st of March. The reason for that is that's the next time Charity Water draw down funds and it gets out to starts going out, and if we go past 31st of March, they do it on a quarterly basis, I think there'll be another quarter, and I just wanted this done and know that money is on its way to do stuff, because it still takes 12 months to get these pumps into these villages and everything, so no more delay. So please, I don't care if it's a buck, if it's all you've got, if all you can give is a dollar, give a dollar, you know, just give it, that's fine. Anyway, I'm waffling on a little bit and probably harassing people far too much and probably breaking all sorts of laws. But I'm just going to say Developers Against Poverty, that's developersagainstpoverty.org. Donate, sign up on the supporters bit, and so we can increase the number of supporters on there. Tweet it. We're at Devs Against Pov on Twitter. Tell your friends, tell your mother, tell your kids, tell whoever, tell your dog. Hopefully, you know, let's get people some water. Right, we've overrun a little bit this week, so I do just want to thank Simon Maddox for coming on the show. I found your story really, really interesting. You can check out some more about Simon at simonmaddox.com and follow him on Twitter at @SimonMaddox. Of course, Mr. Kevin Hochter, thank you very much for being on the show and doing your Cocoa Fusion and your core data tips, and people can pick up Kevin's products at nothirst.com and follow Kevin at @KevinHochter. And Mr. John Fox, what will we do without you? Memoryminer.com on Twitter is @TheJembe, because that's really easy to spell. Is that DJEMBE, John? There we are. And I'm Scotty at MacDevNet. I'm from iDeveloperTV.com. If you're listening live, there is a 20% Valentine's offer today. If you use the coupon code Valentine, 20% off. Oh, and we launched bundles today on iDeveloper TV as well. We've bundled up a load of the courses together and given big discounts and said, yeah, I'll go buy them. So go check that out as well. And then I can give even more money to Developers Against Poverty as well. But it's been great for you to listen in live, those of you in the chat room. Now, that's me telling you, you've just had a great time. Thank you for listening in the chat room. That's what I meant to say. And if you're listening to this on the feeds and on the tubes, then that's great. But do come and join us live one day, every Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. That's 1 o'clock Eastern, 6 in the evening on GMT. We'd love to see you in the chat room. And until next time, you just make sure that you take care. Thank you.